the Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. The SEC spring meetings are going on in Destin. Caroline texted me earlier today because Joe is down in Destin at the spring meetings. He was actually on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. Congratulations to Joe. But Caroline said she's got a hot take, and her hot take is that the spring meetings are actually better than the SEC football media days that we all know about that go on in July. Now, I personally absolutely hate SEC media days, so I'm not going to argue that whatsoever, but I'll say this. A lot more actually happens at the spring meetings than happens at SEC media day. SEC media day is just, here comes Mississippi State, here comes the coach, and now every media member across the Southeast can ask a question at some point to the Mississippi State coach or the three Mississippi State players that they bring with them, and then they do that for every team. Like, that's just a made-for-TV kind of try to get you excited about football event. The spring meetings, I mean, this is where we make real decisions as far as the SEC is concerned, and more importantly, college football. And the way I look at it is this. I look at college football and college sports as a whole because, again, as much as I love the basketball tournament and as excited as I am for the baseball tournament this weekend, let's not kid ourselves. It's all about football. And I kind of look at it like the five families of the mafia, right? There's the commission. And they all get together and they all have their own turf. And they're all respectful in public of one another. And they, you know, kiss each other on the cheek, you know, mwah, mwah. But then behind the scenes inside, they're talking about taking each other out. You know, there's the Corleone family. There's the Barzini family. There's the Tattaglia family. There's Cugno and Stracci. And in this case, it's the conferences. And the SEC, they're the godfather. They're the head of the five families. What the SEC decides at the end of the day is what goes. A couple years ago, the Big Ten, the Pac-12 and the ACC formed an alliance. Remember that? And do you remember how the alliance ended? The SEC said, screw you, took Texas and Oklahoma, and then the Big Ten stabbed the Pac-12 in the back. Their greatest partners for over 60 years stabbed them in the back by taking USC, UCLA, and now the Pac-12 is the Pac-2. So the SEC makes decisions based upon the SEC, but they really also make the decisions for everybody else. And now the big talk at the meetings is what is going to happen with the college football playoff. Regardless, we're going to 16 teams. I don't think we need 16. I think most of you probably think we don't need 16, but get used to it. We're going to 16 teams. The Big Ten wants the 4-4-2-2 model, which is four teams from the Big Ten, four teams from the SEC, two teams from the ACC, two teams from the Big 12, and then the rest are at-large. And like one group of five team, and then three at-larges or whatever's left. And everybody thinks that's a bad idea, except for the Big Ten that wants to guarantee them four spots. Greg Sankey, at the beginning of the spring meetings, came out and said, the data says that 4-4-2-2 model, which the ACC and the Big 12 both absolutely detest. Greg Sankey says, we did the research. The research says that model actually hurts the SEC the most. But we'll see what the ADs and the presidents decide. Because what's going to happen is the ADs, after they have these meetings, are going to go back to their cities. They're going to go back to Fayetteville. They're going to go back to Auburn. They're going to go back to Tuscaloosa. They're going to go back to Athens. They're going to go back to Knoxville. They're going to go back to Columbia, Missouri. And then they're going to tell the presidents what they think they should do. And the presidents are going to say, okay, whatever the AD says, that's probably what we're going to do. And I said yesterday, Greg Sankey knows that the 4-4-2-2 model is not beneficial to the SEC. He knows it because his group has done the research. So this was going to be the litmus test. If in these meetings, Greg Sankey who is really a puppet for the university presidents, could Greg Sankey get through to the athletic directors that this model, the one that the Big Ten is trying to sell us on, is actually a bad model? And if he couldn't get through to the coaches and the athletic directors that this model was a bad model, then it would tell me that the guys making the decisions at the top in the SEC are stupid. And that Greg Sankey failed not in the decision that he made, but in the way he presented what I think is a non-binary, objective, and obvious answer, which is that the 4-4-2-2 model is not good for the SEC. So now there's a headline out at ESPN.com. Greg Sankey talks 5+11 CFP model with coaches, ruse timing. Quote, in a significant pivot from the highly publicized push for automatic qualifiers in the next iteration of the college football playoff, the SEC on Tuesday took a heightened interest in a 16-team model that would include the 5 highest-ranked conference champions and 11 at-large bids. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said he talked with the league's football coaches at length about the alternative model. And apparently, the coaches seem to like that. Sankey said, quote, at the coaching level, the question is, why wouldn't that be fine? Why wouldn't we do that? We talked about 16 with them, so good conversation, not a destination, but the first time I've had the ability to really go in depth with the ideas with them. So here's what Sankey's doing, and I actually think this is really smart. Instead of going to the athletic directors, again, Sankey has all the data. And there's no doubt in my mind, Sankey has already talked to all 16 athletic directors at length about this. I almost wonder if Sankey thinks at the AD level he doesn't have the votes. And I can see how the ADs, counting the money, say, well, let's guarantee 4. Well, the data says we'll get 4 in every year. The data actually says some years we'll get 5-6 in there. Most years we'll get 5-6 in there. So why would we want to give the Big Ten 3 extra guaranteed spots when we don't have to? But I can see the AD saying, well, you know, some years if we have a bad year, we don't want to be like Alabama last year. And so instead of going to the ADs and trying to pitch them on the data, which I'm sure he's already done, he's gone to the coaches. The coaches. It's a very odd how this all works. The coaches in the SEC might have more juice at certain programs than the athletic directors do. If a very popular SEC coach comes out in public and says, I think we should do this, it's going to be hard for that athletic director to publicly go against his head coach. Now, in some instances, nobody cares what the Mississippi State coach thinks or what Eli Drinkwitz thinks. But can Danny White really come out and publicly go against what Josh Heupel's in favor of? I don't know if he can. So Sankey is going to the coaches. And he is playing the we're the best card with these coaches, saying, look, guys, we're the best. If we do this, we're going to get 7 teams into the college football playoff. If we go to the 4-4-2-2 model, we're guaranteeing spots to the Big Ten and guaranteeing spots to the ACC and guaranteeing spots to the Big 12. Who was the second best team in the Big 12 last year? I don't even remember. Did you want them in the playoff? Did you need them in the playoff? No. By the way, I think it was BYU. We don't need them in the playoff. They can get 1 team in there. How about that? And so it looks like the coaches seem to be in favor of going to, again, the 5 conference champions and then everybody else give me the best teams. But I don't know about the athletic directors. According to the ESPN story, quote, in the meeting room, sources told ESPN, it appeared that the athletic directors were focused on 9 SEC games and a model with 4 automatic qualifiers. The coaches voiced strongly that they wanted a model with 5 automatic qualifiers and 11 at-larges with a preference to stay in an 8-game league schedule. The coaching perspective, as ESPN writes, hints at potential roadblocks for playoff expansion, as there's a sentiment that the other leagues wouldn't want the playoff to grow, especially all the way from 12 to 16, if the SEC didn't go to a 9-game conference schedule. So it sounds like Sankey knows he doesn't have the votes with the ADs, but he might be able to get through to the coaches. And it seems like that's the route he's trying to go. The ADs probably are looking straight at the money, saying, we need 4 teams every year. And then they get those extra play-in games, which they'll sell, and they'll make a bunch of money. And here we go. Guaranteed money. I think Sankey's telling the coaches, you guys are good enough. You can play your way to 7. We'll be fine. So we shall see. But what I'm determined is, whatever the SEC decides is what's going to happen. If the SEC decides 4-4-2-2, it'll be 4-4-2-2. If the SEC decides 5 plus 11, it'll be 5 plus 11. And right now, Sankey's trying to convince the league not to go 4-4-2-2. As I said yesterday, this will be the litmus test that tells us whether or not Sankey can get through to the stupidity of the conference. 615-737-1025. That's our phone number if you want to weigh in. 615-737-1025 here on the program. And there's a one thing that I'll tell you about the SEC that no matter what they say, I can tell you. They have proven to us they do not care about this. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
But it seemed like yesterday the commissioner had some issues with the media.
Yeah, and look, I do have sympathy for him to some extent in terms of, first of all, people, I think, and he has made these statements before, like, you know, I do work for people. And I think sometimes people think that he's this autonomous dictator. He's not. He works for the presidents. But you know, of course, the athletic directors have a strong saying. He mentioned that back and forth. And he was right that the SEC didn't need the 12. Now, it is more money for everyone, right? So it's a little bit disingenuous to me, but that's not inaccurate. But again, this to me is an opportunity for Greg Sankey and the SEC to say, Tony Petitti, Big Ten, no, this is not, we're not doing some gimmicky MLB network stuff. And this is the opportunity right now, and I hope they take the opportunity, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, and I understand it is a powerful coalition. And for Greg Sankey to move toward the Big Ten, it's like, why do, you know, if you cover NASCAR, why do you draft behind, why is the guy in second place in better shape? Because he's going to get the propulsion to move ahead of the guy in first. But you'd rather be in business with the Big Ten than the other two. But it was still a questionable choice to some people watching.
Right. And of course, you know, you brought up legislators making comments and things like that. I mean, look, this does anger the ACC and the Big 12, and I just, to me, it's not worth, again, propping up the Big 10 unnecessarily for all of that backlash that you're going to get from a lot of different factions.
That was Joe on the Paul Feinbaum Show basically saying, SEC, do not get into bed with the Big 10. And I do like how Joe pointed out, Greg Sankey is not the end-all, be-all of college football. The SEC is the end-all and be-all of what ends up happening with college football. The SEC will decide. If you remember years ago, it ain't going to be the Big Ten. If you remember years ago during COVID, the Big Ten decided we're not playing football. Now, they ended up reversing their stance. But the Big Ten said, we're not playing football, and we want everybody else to follow suit. And the SEC said, no. Now, Sankey works for the league presidents. And I don't know who amongst the league presidents has the strongest pull. But whoever that person is, that is the most important person in all of this. But here's the one thing we've got to recognize when it comes to the Southeastern Conference. And I've been watching a Netflix docuseries on the Cold War. You know, where basically everybody had the nuclear warheads and the arms race and everything else, and why we fight all these proxy wars, because nobody's going to fight on American soil because they're going to get nuked. Nobody's going to fight on Russian soil Soviet soil because they're going to get nuked. So you fight all these proxy wars and everything else. And the SEC and the Big Ten right now are kind of the same way as far as the Cold War is concerned. The SEC is not worried about what's in the best interest of the game. the SEC could decide, hey, we're just going to go with the automatic qualifiers. We get one automatic bid, and the ACC gets an automatic bid, and the Big 12 gets an automatic bid, and the Big 10 gets an automatic bid, and the Group of Five gets an automatic bid, and then let's go with 11 at-larges, and that's how it's going to be. And we may lose money on this, but we're going to do this for the good of the game. The SEC is not going to do that for the good of the game. Here's what the Big Ten wants, and this is what Joe was alluding to in that cut right there with Feinbaum. They want four automatic qualifiers. If they get four automatic qualifiers, what they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to, on Championship Sunday, or excuse me, Championship Saturday, they're going to be able to have the Big Ten Championship game. That'll be on Fox. That'll be at 7 o'clock at night, and they'll get a gajillion dollars for it. Then, earlier in the day, they will have the third-place team play the sixth-place team. That will also get them a bunch of money. They'll put that on CBS. Then, what you'll also have, probably on Fox at noon, maybe on NBC, you will have the fourth-place team play the fifth-place team. And what's going to happen in the Big Ten is the winner of the conference championship game goes to the playoff. The loser of the conference championship game goes to the playoff. The winner of the 3-6 game goes to the playoff. And the winner of the 4-5 game goes to the playoff. So we originally, when it came to the playoff, we originally had 16 teams. Because that's what they're going to go. They're going to go to a 16-team model. But the Big Ten is trying to make their own inventory for their own playoff games. Well, is that in the best interest of the game? CBS and NBC, they'll pay for that. I mean, even in the last deal, NBC got a Big Ten championship game that originally belonged to Fox, and the Big Ten had to pay Fox money back because they gave away something that they didn't own. Well, this is a way to go get that money back. And to get even more money. But I wouldn't say that that's in the best interest of college football. But I look at the SEC, which should value tradition. There's a big fight internally in the Big Ten. Ohio State doesn't like playing night games later in the year. Neither does Penn State, neither does Michigan, neither does Michigan State. They don't like playing night games late in the year because that's traditionally not what they do. Well, NBC has a night game every week, and NBC wants Ohio State and Michigan State and everybody else. So that's a problem they're going to have to fix. The league hates the fact that their best game with Fox goes at noon every week. Those schools hate it. But that's the TV window, so that's what they're going to do. The Big Ten doesn't care. They just want the money. The SEC, I think, should value their tradition. But at each passing opportunity, they say, no, we're going to do what's best for us over what's best for the game. When the conference realignment started in 2010, before the latest conference realignment, that was the Big Ten that pulled in Nebraska and Colorado went to the Pac-12. The SEC responded with A&M in Missouri, but again, they didn't start it. This has been all SEC. Texas, Oklahoma, that was the SEC. Expanded college football playoff, that was the SEC. And while the Big Ten, I think, has really done the actual nuking by ruining the Pac-12, ending the Rose Bowl, you know, the meaningful outlook of the Rose Bowl, and everything else, it was the SEC that started all of this. So if you're expecting the SEC to do what's in the best interest of the game or to do what's in the best interest of the sport, I'm here to tell you, that's not going to happen. Because the SEC has told us time and time again, Greg Sankey's threatened to pull the SEC out of the NCAA tournament for basketball. They only care about themselves. If you have a hope that anybody can save college sports, it's Notre Dame. They're the one school that's out there that doesn't have to go with the SEC or the Big Ten, that the SEC and the Big Ten know you can't really have college football without Notre Dame. If the SEC and the Big Ten decided to break away from everybody else and have their own playoff, AFC, NFC, the one school that we would, it would not be legitimate if Notre Dame was not a part of that. So I look at Notre Dame as the one entity in all of this that can actually save the sport and do what's in the best interest of the game. But don't act like you're going to get that out of the minions that control Greg Sankey, because they've already decided it's not going to happen. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I know that at OTAs, attendance is voluntary. Voluntary, Jared, make sure you know that. But there was one in particular that was not spotted today at Titans OTAs that, well, I kind of got a problem with, and maybe you should too. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Potential grand jury indictment hanging over his head. It would seem that would be something that would affect the guy coming to work. What have you seen from him, and how has that affected?
You know, the things about Legarius is that when he's here and working, he's fantastic. He's all the things that we hope he would be. Certainly when guys have off-field issues, he's not the first one. He won't be the last. There's a lot of guys that have things going on outside of the building that maybe aren't in the public knowledge, or they're dealing with things with their families. There's a lot of things that happen that just like all of us, you know, you have to separate your personal life and your work life, and be able to come to work and focus on the task at hand. I think he's done a good job of that. Certainly anytime you have distractions off the field, you prefer not to have those. But he's done a good job of handling it and keeping, you know, the work here the main thing, and dealing with the things off the field when he has to deal with them. But I would say that's not unique to anybody in particular. I think that happens to a lot more guys than people realize. Again, maybe not necessarily civil cases or court cases, but just life in general. It can be hard to separate sometimes, and I think he's done a good job of it.
There you go. That was Brian Callahan today being asked about Legarius Sneed, saying, hey, you know, we would prefer that this not happen, but Legarius Sneed's done a great job of focusing and taking care of business. And look, all guys have issues in their personal lives. And yeah, but as I was talking to somebody today on the practice field, I think there is a difference between, yeah, Sneed's got an issue in his personal life that he's got to deal with, and Sneed, during the season, allegedly was involved in shooting up a car dealership that they didn't really need to have happen. It's kind of a difference between the two, right? You know, hey, guys are dealing with stuff off the field. So-and-so's mom got diagnosed with cancer. That is something that, hey, he's got to deal with that off the field. He and his family, it sucks for him. There's no way, no matter how much you say, this is not a distraction, this shouldn't be a distraction, there's no way that guy can completely block that out. And it sucks. And there's nothing he did wrong, and there's nothing his family did wrong, and there's nothing the team could have done about it, and there's nothing. And it kind of sounded like Brian Callahan was equating Legarius Sneed's problem to that. Well, I have a little bit of an issue with that. But I also have an issue with the fact that Legarius Sneed was not out on the practice field today. He was not out there at OTAs, according to PK. Missing from Titans voluntary Phase 3 OTA, Tyler Lockett, Legarius Sneed, Kevin Zeitler, Tavondre Sweat, Jeffrey Simmons. Now, I'll get to Simmons, Sweat, and Zeitler later, specifically Simmons and Sweat. But let's talk about Sneed for a second. If I were the Titans, and I have been very clear about this, I would wait for the commissioner to suspend Legarius Sneed via the personal conduct policy. And the second he suspends Sneed, I am releasing him and taking back all the guaranteed money. So it would save the Titans around $19 million in cash this year and $7.5 million that's guaranteed for next year. And I'd move on and I'd start over. If you're Legarius Sneed, there is nothing that you could ever do at this point to get that money back. And look, it's not my business, as far as how much money he has or he doesn't have. But since all he gives a rat's ass about is the money anyways, decided, oh, no, I care about winning. Send me to the Titans, Kansas City. I think it's pretty obvious it matters. If I'm LeJarius Sneed, I need to be prepared for the commissioner to suspend me, and I need to be prepared for the Titans to want to cut me. If I'm LeJarius Sneed, I need to be prepared for the fact that I'm probably going to have to write this alleged victim a $1 million-plus check. And let me say this. If a Titan player shot at me and I didn't die, you bet your ass I'd be suing too. Allegedly. So if you're LeJarius Sneed, again, not to count his money, but if you get released with bad knees after a season in which you played 5 games and you weren't very good, and then during that season, you allegedly shot up a car dealership, you got problems. Because if the Titans release you, if the commissioner suspends you and the Titans release you, there's not another team in the league that's going to give you a big contract. They're going to give you a league minimum contract. You're going to make $1.2 million. That's it. Well, you're probably going to have to pay this alleged victim more than $1.2 million. The best thing that could happen to Sneed is that the commissioner doesn't suspend him. I don't think that's going to happen. The second best thing that LeJarius Sneed could do for himself is to get his ass into the good graces of the Tennessee Titans. How do you get into the good graces of the team if they already resent you because you're never healthy and then you don't show up for OTAs? How do you get into their good graces? I mean, what's so important today when it comes to LeJarius Sneed that he wasn't out there at the OTAs? What's so important that LeJarius Sneed, who is one of the 8 team captains in this transformative team-building offseason the Titans are having, it's going to change them from the worst team in the league to the best team. Where was he today? What did he have going on? And I got to tell you, I thought it was kind of embarrassing for Brian Callahan to get up there today and for Brian Callahan to essentially be defending LeJarius Sneed, saying, well, he's done a great job. Look, he's got things in his personal life he's got to worry about, but outside of that, he's been great. No, he has things in his personal life to worry about because he caused them. I just don't understand what the point of having this guy around is going to be. And then he doesn't show up for the voluntary work? Give me a break. This guy's a bad apple. And Callahan went and made him captain. You know, one of the 8 captains. Why? Somebody explain that to me. And look, there may be something going on today, because there are a handful of OTA days, and we're not invited for most of the OTA days. But if you're LeJarius Sneed, again, don't you need to be aware of the fact that the media is going to be out there today? Aren't you aware of the fact that your big salary and the persona that you came in with and the juicy details of what you got in trouble for are absolutely newsworthy to everybody? Wouldn't you be there just so you could show face that you were there? And I have a hard time with that. And so today when I saw LeJarius Sneed wasn't there, after I heard Callahan talk about how great LeJarius Sneed has been doing, I thought, oh, God. What a joke. Just a joke. 615-737-1025. Ricky says he is not getting suspended. There are 0 criminal charges. Actually, Ricky, I have a copy of the police report. I'm going to doubt that you do. But I have a copy of the police report. And while there have not been criminal charges, there have been criminal charges, assault with a deadly weapon, the grand jury has to decide whether or not to indict. Now, earlier in all of this, I said, I go, I've never heard of this, you know, I've never heard of, so, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say I've never heard of grand juries indicting, because obviously I have, but I just don't know enough about the process when it comes to the grand juries, because I'm like, so the grand jury has to hear this out in order for them to indict Snead, as opposed to just, he did it, let's charge him. And PK said that when there's a felony involved, it has to go to the grand jury. So you can tell me all you want about zero criminal charges. No, no, no. The grand jury, they are going to convene a grand jury to hear testimony to then decide what to charge Legarius Sneed with. That is not the same as, hey, Legarius Sneed didn't get charged, the end. Which is what ended up happening to Deshaun Watson. The grand jury convened. They said no charges. Well, maybe that happens with Sneed, but based off the information that we know, I got a hard time believing that's what's going to happen. I mean, I had I talked to a cop this weekend. I was hanging out with a buddy of mine's a cop, and we were talking about this, and he was talking about people today are so stupid, you know, when it comes to committing crimes. He goes, we'll have people that'll say things like, oh, no, I wasn't speeding at the time of the crash. And it's like the computer information inside the car tells us all we need to know. Well, between the surveillance videos and everything else, they're going to figure out what Legarius Sneed did or didn't do. If it was the other guy that did the driving and did the shooting, which is the only way I think Sneed can get out of this at all, is if both the guy did everything and Sneed said, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Well, they're going to figure that out. If Legarius Sneed called the alleged victim and tried to threaten him not to go to the police, as they are alleging happened, well, there's going to be a paper trail of that, and they're going to be able to get down to that. So, I mean, good luck to him. But again, where the hell was he today? Like, where was Legarius Sneed? He wasn't even there. And it's just such a joke. Kyle says, besides the money and the wasted third-round pick, I don't want to watch Pac-Man 2.0. Pac-Man was actually good. You know, Pac-Man had all his problems off the field. Pac-Man still played for like 15 years in the league, even after he got in trouble. He was actually good. Sneed, and I know he was good in Kansas City, Sneed was not good last year. One texter says, it just feels like Callahan has no idea or sense of urgency. I'm not sure what it would look like in the offseason, but I don't think it would be how he's been cracking on and being all sarcastic and whatnot. I haven't heard Callahan be sarcastic. I mean, I think Callahan knows. Like, he's on the hot seat. Like, I think he knows. But there is one thing that I noticed about Callahan today at practice that I do want to get to, that I understand why he's doing it. And I understand why he thinks it would be a good idea. But I actually think this is a bad idea. And we'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You talked a lot about building bonding with all these little games that you've had throughout the off-season program. For the guys who were here last year, and it's probably about half, a little over half the roster, how do you kind of burn away the bad taste from last year and just kind of get that out of everybody's mind, but still haven't learned from it?
I'll be honest with you, Terry. I don't really want to burn that taste out of our mouth. I feel it every day when I walk in here, and our players should too, the ones that were here, because we don't want to be in that position. We don't want to have the type of season we had last year. We're determined to make that look different. So I think part of that being in the back of our minds is a good thing. It's motivating in the sense that we don't want to repeat our mistakes. We don't want to repeat the things that lost us games, and we got to improve those things to put ourselves in better position to win. So I would say that burning that taste out is not something I actually want to do. I think it's a healthy thing to have that in the back of your mind and know, you know, what the benchmark is and where exactly we have to get better. And I think guys have done a good job of that so far.
That was Brian Callahan today. He says, I don't want to forget about what happened last year. We need to learn from what happened last year. And there was one observation that I had at OTAs today that kind of stood out. You know, last year in Brian Callahan's first year, when it was training camp, OTAs, et cetera, at practice, Callahan was very involved with the offense. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't involved with the offense today. He was calling the plays. He had the little walkie-talkie and was the one, you know, saying into the helmet, you know, what the play call was. So he's calling the plays and hands-on there. But during the 7-on-7 period, prior to the 7-on-7 period, when the quarterbacks were working with the receivers and the tight ends and everything else, it was Nick Holtz, the offensive coordinator, who was running the operation. It was Mike McCoy, the former head coach, who's now the senior offensive assistant, analyst, whatever, who was a part of that process. It was Bo Hardigree, the quarterback's coach. Callahan was off to the side, you know, just kind of swinging his whistle around his finger while talking with Dave Ziegler, the assistant general manager, just over on the side in between the fields. And at one point, during the individual period, Callahan was kind of moving around a little bit, keeping an eye on what was going on with the defensive players. And it actually kind of reminded me of the way Vrabel used to run practice. When Vrabel was the coach, and during individuals, Vrabel would run over to each period. So the offensive line would be being coached by Coach Turbo, you know, over down in the corner, and here'd come Vrabel, and Vrabel'd see something, and he'd blow the whistle, say, ah, Johnny, get your hands inside, go here, you know, whatever, and then Vrabel'd move on to the next side. And Callahan was doing a little bit of that, though he was not, you know, blowing the whistle and stopping him and saying, no, do this instead, which is, you know, the very hands-on approach of Vrabel. And this goes in line with what I have gathered, which is, after last year, Brian Callahan committed to being more of a head coach than just being the offensive coach. I actually think that's a bad idea. Now, I think it's too late to change. And I think Callahan, when trying to sell returning as the head coach, said, I learned this year I can't just be in the offense. I need to be in the special teams meetings. I need to be in the defensive meetings. I actually think the opposite should be happening. I think Callahan should have fired Denard Wilson and fired Colt Anderson after last year, hired Bones Fossil to be the special teams coordinator, which he did, and hire somebody that's got a lot of experience to be the defensive coordinator to give that guy that side of the ball. And then Callahan, who's calling the plays on offense, needs to lock in and focus on the offensive side of the ball. Instead, it looks like he's trying to do the opposite. He's trying to be more hands-on with the whole team and more hands-off with the offense. And I don't like that idea. The hands-on offensive coaches, they farm out the defensive side of the ball. Andy Reid, they'll show Andy Reid when the Chiefs are on defense and Andy is sitting down with the tablet and the Waffle House menu with Patrick Mahomes or whomever going over the place because Steve Spagnuolo is running the defense. Vic Fangio in Philadelphia runs the defense. That's what should be happening here. But they get themselves all talked into these young guys that have never done anything about the potential and, oh, we can be the Ravens because we hired the Ravens guy. The Ravens lost Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, to the Seahawks. They promoted within, and they did not promote Denard Wilson. They promoted Zach Orr, and they made him the defensive coordinator. And midway through the year, John Harbaugh, because this guy did not have the experience and they needed somebody more hands-on to help, went out, picked up the phone, and called Pawpaw Dean Pease and said, Dean, save us. The Titans have done none of that. And it's too late now. But I ultimately think that if you want to do this way, offensive guru coach, you farm out the defense. I thought that when they hired Callahan as the coach, and there was nothing that happened last year with Denard Wilson as the coordinator that made me think, oh, yeah, no, Denard can do this on his own. But nope. Callahan's going to try the exact opposite of what they probably should do. 615-737-1025. Chris is up next here on our program. Chris, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Jared. Big fan. I just want to give you a little generalization of what's going on with the legal proceedings for Snead. They're probably what they're going to do is called the direct presentment.
So I take it you're an attorney.
No. I'm a retired police officer and current narcotics investigator.
Oh, okay.
So what they'll do is they'll do a felony hearing. They'll present all the facts of the case. They'll present it to a judge. The judge will then determine whether the case will be heard by a grand jury for indictment. Now, you asked if he could have gotten arrested and had all that stuff done prior to all this. Sure, they could have done that. But it seems to me that they went in a different direction. In my opinion, it's kind of an easier route to go to. And a lot of district attorneys like to do it, especially with folks who come.
All right, Chris,
go.
You're kind of boring me. Do you think that Snead's going to get in trouble or not?
If the facts of the case are what they are, I can't see why he wouldn't get indicted.
Okay. So, again, just based off of what seems like, I mean, when the attorney of the guy that's suing him says, we've got the video, and the video shows the gun coming out of the car, and the car belonging to LeJarius Snead, it seems very difficult for me. Thank you, Chris. It seems very difficult for me to believe that LeJarius Snead's not getting in trouble. And I know LeJarius Snead's argument, because PK reported this, is, well, LeJarius Snead didn't do this. It was the other guy. So what you have to have is you have to have the other guy being the driver of the car and the other guy being the one who shot the gun. And it's somewhat hard for me to believe that that would be the case. So, again, maybe Snead gets in trouble. Maybe he doesn't. It's a terrible look. And he certainly has not done anything to dissuade anything that I would say that, oh, yeah, this guy, his head's in the right place. Even though Callahan tried to say, you know, we all have problems in our personal lives, but he's done a great job since he's been here. That certainly did not help matters, in my opinion, in the court of public opinion. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number. Cam Ward was out there for the first time today. He looked fine. Will Levis today was out there. And we saw Will Levis, the new and improved Will Levis. I'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.